Good evening. I'm Michael Carey. Thank you for joining us on Running. We're coming to you on Alaska Public Television and KSKA Anchorage. Tonight, we'll hear from candidates for the Alaska Legislature. We'll feature candidates in contested races, and you will also hear from candidates in uncontested races. Joining me on the panel is Dacia Eaton, South Central reporter for KSKA Radio. Now let's meet the Republican candidates in Senate District J, starting with Bob Bell, who will give us his opening one-minute statement. Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate you inviting us here this evening. First of all, Senate J is everything from Campbell Lake through Turnagain west of Minnesota. And there's a few exceptions there. Part of Spinard isn't in it, but roughly that's the area. So why am I running for the state Senate? Well, what happened is I watched what happened in the last two sessions of the legislature and saw three senators in the state Senate, in essence, take over the Senate. They had the Natural Resources Committee and the Judiciary Committee, and they basically killed all the major legislation that was coming to the Senate in those committees. So basically, three senators were making the decisions for 700,000 Alaskans. That's just wrong. So that's one of the main reasons that I'm running for this seat. I also bring a lot of experience in business and politics, so I think I can add to the mix down there and get the Senate turned around. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Now let's meet Liz Vasquez.
Hi there. Well, I've lived with my husband for almost 30 years in the Anchorage area. We have lived in West Anchorage for 15 years. Our daughter Amelia was born here in Anchorage. I was elected twice to the board of directors of Chugach Electric and was elected chair. And while we were, while I was chair, we were trailblazing. We started the ball rolling in the Susitna Hydro Project. We started a conservation program and partnered with Green Star. We also partnered with the mayor to find out how we can work together and save the ratepayers' money. As a result, the new power plant is being built together with MLMP, and the Navigant Consulting Report forecasts or predicts a $36 million savings. I'm running because we're facing some serious economic issues, and we need the courage, determination that I can bring to that process.
Thank you very much. Now we'll go to the reporters' questions. I'll ask the first one. Mr. Bell, the first question will be for you. You'll have 45 seconds to answer. Ms. Vasquez, you'll have 30 seconds to comment on the answer you hear. Mr. Bell, you say you're going to reduce the cost of government. 45 seconds, I know, is not a long time, but could you give us a specific example?
Well, yeah, I think one of the places is in regulation. The state of Alaska duplicates a lot of the regulations that the federal government has, and I don't see any reason for us to do that. The other thing is that we have a budget lapse every year, and I think that we could take a look at that and reduce spending there. The other thing is zero-based budgeting, and I really believe in that, and I think that if we went to that like we did on the assembly, all of a sudden you find out things like the Public Works Department has 25 pickups, but they're only using 15 of them. So it's that sort of thing. The trick is to dig in deep into the budget and look at what they're doing and then question everything from the ground up.
Liz Vasquez, 30 seconds.
Well, academic studies show that zero budgeting has minimal effect on the actual budgeting process. And I would say that the legislature has been lax, if not lazy, in implementing efficiencies and recommendations that the legislative audit office does. They issue reports each year and issue recommendations, and I would proceed from there. The devil's in the details.
Dacia Eaton.
This is for Ms. Vasquez. In your election statement, you talked about gridlock in Juneau. Can you be specific? What exactly are you talking about?
They do nothing, just whine and complain. For example, during the special session, the governor proposed his compromise bill, and they did nothing but torpedo and criticize and refuse to have any hearings. They refuse to roll up their sleeves and work on those parts of the bill they did not like. It was all about, you know, obstructionist tactics and doing nothing on behalf of the people.
Mr. Bell, 30 seconds.
I think I could sum it up in one word: coalition. And I think what's happened here is we've ended up with this coalition with Democrats and Republicans, and that's a weak configuration. What happens is three or four senators in that coalition say, I don't like this deal, and it's dead. Our system of government is based on partisan politics. There's Democrats and there's Republicans. They take turns being in charge, and that system works. When you merge them, it falls apart, and we end up with gridlock, which is exactly what happened the last two sessions of the legislature.
Thank you, sir. My question is for Liz Vasquez. We've been talking about the gas line since the 70s. Politicians talk about it all the time. Is there a gas line in our future, or just more talk?
Well, typically, there's always a lot of talk. And that's why I like to get to Juneau. As chair of Shoegatch, we didn't do much talk. We did more action. We were trailblazing all the way through. And we did a lot of things. I mean, too numerous to recount here. But I do have a track record of getting things done. We need to monetize our gas. There's some indication that Japan is interested in buying some of our gas, but we also have to ensure it's a balancing act. We have to ensure that we have sufficient local supplies for our utilities.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bell.
Well, I think we do, but the gas line has to make sense economically. We're not going to get the oil companies to spend $30 billion building a gas line if they can't make money at it. So we have to find that tipping point. And Liz is right, Japan is buying gas at 12 bucks right now, but they're not going to sign a 30-year contract for that because there's gas all over the world. So it's a tough deal, and it's a tough question to answer.
Daisy Eaton for Bob Bell.
What, if anything, can the legislature do to reduce the cost of health care for Alaskans?
You know, that's another really tough answer. My oldest son is a doctor. He says that 25% of his time and 25% of his expenses is doing paperwork for Medicare or the insurance companies. Also, he does a lot of tests that he really doesn't think he needs to do just to cover himself on insurance. So I think we need tort reform, for one thing, as far as medical. And the other thing is we should let doctors be doctors and not accountants. So that's a big one.
Ms. Vasquez.
Well, a lot of the solutions, unfortunately, deal with the federal government. For instance, healthcare savings accounts are a very good way of incentivizing savings on the part of individuals, opening up our WAMI program to provide more medical doctors would be another, opening up our nursing program to have more providers, and opening competition among insurance companies.
Okay, thank you very much. Now I'll ask a couple questions. Let's go back to Bob Bell and let's stick with the coalition question. Gary Stevens, a Republican, was president of the coalition. If you don't like coalitions, should Gary Stevens be removed by his constituents? Should he be thrown out of the Republican Party? What do you do if somebody becomes the president of a coalition?
Well, first of all, as far as him being thrown out of the legislature, that's up to his constituents. You know, if that's what they wanted him to do, then that's fine. You know, we sometimes forget that we go to the legislature to represent the people in our district, not ourselves. And as far as the Republican Party is concerned, I think what Stevens and Stedman did was not in the best interests of the party in the caucus, but they did what they did, and I think it's up to their constituents to hold them accountable or not.
Thank you. Liz Vasquez.
Well, our leadership doesn't seem to have a long-term vision for this state, a 10, 15, 20, 30 years out. Unfortunately, we are facing an economic train wreck. You cannot double state spending in the past 10 years and at the same time have a 40% loss on your oil production in your pipeline, the pipeline providing 90% of state income. So we're headed towards a train wreck, and unfortunately, the leadership doesn't recognize that.
Okay, now we'll go to our second question, and I'll ask Ms. Vasquez, and we'll start with you. As you know, the state of Alaska has been the recipient of more federal dollars than just about any other state in the country for several decades, I believe. We're the first or second, usually in that category. How should the legislature respond to a decline in federal dollars coming into Alaska?
Let's go back to the annual legislative audit reports. take a look at them, implement the efficiencies, try to reduce waste inefficiencies. For example, because of my prodding and questioning, the local school district now with a budget of over $800 million for the first time is going to be funding an internal auditor position starting October 1st. I do believe in more accountability, and we need to have that.
Thank you. Mr. Bell.
Well, first of all, the federal dollars is kind of schizophrenic. A lot of times there's matching state money. So if we put up $1, they put up $10. And so I think, first of all, we need to prioritize that to make sure that we get the matching money from the federal government. And the second thing I think we need to look at is if these federal dollars coming in cost us more than we get. And I think the school district is a good example of that, because the federal requirements on the school district cause the school district to spend more money than they actually get from the federal government. So we need to take a hard look at that.
Okay, now let's go to the candidates' questions. We'll start with you, Mr. Bell. Your first question for Ms. Vasquez. And she'll have 45 seconds to respond, and then you'll have 30 seconds to comment.
You bet. You know, one of the last places in Anchorage where you can buy a lot and build a house is the Sand Lake Gravel Pit. So there's a tremendous boom of housing going on in there. And that area is served by West Diamond and Kincaid. Both of those roads are not up to snuff to handle that new traffic. So how would you go about getting those roads upgraded?
That's a very personal decision for me and a personal problem for me, because I live right off Raspberry, and to exit and go into any part of the city, I have to drive through Raspberry or Diamond. So my priorities are to make those roads more capable of more traffic and more pedestrian friendly. I'm very concerned. I think about that every day as I drive through Raspberry. Sometimes it's several times a day, so.
Mr. Bell, 30 seconds.
Well, my question was, how would you go about getting those roads upgraded? You didn't apparently answer that question, but it would be a matter of getting the priority on the AMATS and the local roads service area concept put into place to make sure that we get that funded in next year's capital budget.
Ms. Vasquez for Mr. Bell.
If you win the primary, how do you plan to win the general when you're not walking your district and you're not doing media, web media?
I guess I don't understand that question. I've walked the entire district once, and we're a third of the way through it again. We've walked everywhere in the district and down every neighborhood and every street, and we're also running TV and radio ads. So I don't understand. We're doing exactly what you're saying we're not doing.
Ms. Vasquez.
No, I'm talking about Facebook, Twitter. Social media is now the way that the younger folks communicate with each other and find out about campaigns and so forth. And I've walked into many places where I've been the only candidate to visit those households, so.
Thank you. Mr. Bell, second question?
Well, I guess I'll ask the same question of you, is that you seem to have a problem raising enough money, so you've had to basically self-finance your campaign. How would you anticipate doing that if you were to win the primary? I understand Hollis French has $100,000, $75,000 still in the bank, so how do you plan to compete with that?
Well, first of all, elections are not about just getting other people's money and running ads on the radio and TV. It's about going out to the district and finding people and talking to them and finding their needs and concerns. And it's also, as you well know, in the primary, a lot of people stay away. They don't want to commit, and they'll commit after the primary. And frankly, the good old boy system is supporting you. I'm rather independent. I'm not going to be in the pocket of any special interests or any special industry.
Mr. Bell.
Well, neither am I, and I'm sure neither are you. And as far as walking, getting out there walking, I'm sure as you're walking door to door, Liz, you're noticing maybe 5-6 times as many of my signs in the yards than yours. So to say that I'm not out there walking, apparently somebody is. And I think it takes 3 legs to that stool to win a campaign, which is going door to door, addressing the issues, and having sufficient funds to compete with whoever you're running against.
Thank you. Liz Vasquez, your second question.
Well, Mr. Bell, there have been allegations about a subsistence hunt and an attempt to illegally keep the horns, and it's been a matter of in the press and on the radio. How do you plan to deal with that?
Well, first of all, I assume you were a prosecutor at one time.
Yes.
And I assume you didn't go out and make accusations against people without first
getting allegations.
The facts and knowing what you're talking about.
I said allegations.
That hunt was perfectly legal. There was absolutely nothing done illegal on that hunt. And if you would have checked with the people in Nome, if you would have checked with the Department of Fish and Game, if you would have called me or anybody else on the hunt, or if you would have talked to the carver that carved the horns up for us, you would have found out that there were no accusations made, none whatsoever, other than the one you made. So I think your credibility is definitely at risk, and it's somewhat arrogant for you to make an accusation like that with no facts to back it up.
Ms. Vasquez.
There's two articles in the Alaska Dispatch, and Shannon Moore has discussed this at length on the radio. I don't always believe what's in print or stated on the radio, but there are these allegations out there. And I state allegations.
Mr. Bell, your final question here in this segment.
Well, I guess I'm going to stay on that subject. The allegation in the dispatch was that we intended to intimidate the biologist. Now, how Craig Medred knew what we intended to do is somewhat subject to question. I don't understand how you could read that article and go on the radio and go on TV and make an accusation that we tried, as you said, on the other TV station.
We need a question mark in here, Mr. Bell.
What do you base that allegation on? What facts do you base that allegation on?
I already answered that. I'm saying, how are you going to deal with that allegation? I'm not accusing you of that. How are you going to deal with allegations made by others?
Sounded like
in the
an
newspaper?
No,
in the radio. How are you going to deal with it? That's all.
I just did.
Okay, Ms. Vasquez, the last question by a candidate is for Mr. Bell, and then you'll have a response, and we'll move on. Any subject you want. Hey, your question for him.
I have no other questions.
Mr. Bell, you want to make a? We do have a second here. A final observation on this little colloquy you've had? We want to let it go.
Well, no, it upsets me because we went on that muskox hunt. We did everything perfectly legal, and we made sure of it because it was two game board members and a high-ranking official of the Department of Game. The Department of Fish and Game looked into it, found that absolutely nothing wrong was done, and these accusations come out, and it's just not fair. And it upsets me.
Okay, we'll go back to the reporter's questions, and the format will be the same. I'll ask questions. The recipient of the question will get 45 seconds. The other candidate will get 30 seconds. So my question is going to be for Ms. Vasquez.
Yes.
As you know, our jails are full to overfull. We send many prisoners to other parts of the United States to serve their sentences. Is there any way... And this is a very costly process or procedure, as we know. Is there any way to both reduce the number of prisoners and their alternatives and reduce our costs?
Well, we really do need to look more at rehabilitation so we don't have repeat offenders. And that's a multi-pronged issue. In other words, do we have enough educational mechanisms in place to teach people life skills so that they don't go ahead and commit crimes again? And also, the repeat offenders are not getting deterred. So I think in the prosecutorial function, you're going to have to beef that up for repeat offenders. So it's a multi-pronged issue.
Mr. Bell.
Well, first of all, it's less expensive to send them to Arizona or wherever we send them, even though I hate to see that happen. But I would rather see us be more proactive and deal more with at-risk youth to try to get them going down the right path rather than the wrong path, then they don't end up in prison in the first place. The cost of keeping a prisoner in prison is almost as the same as sending a kid to college. And yeah. I'd much rather send them to college.
Thank you. Let's go to Daisha Eaton.
That leads right to the next question, which is about education funding. Are we getting our money's worth when it comes to education? It's the largest element of the state budget.
Okay. No, I don't think we are. I think that the appropriation that comes from the state to the school districts should be inflation proofed. It's not now. So basically every year we're sending effectively less money to the school district. So I'd like to see us do better with that. I also think there's some other ways to save money with the school district that, where it could be more efficient and get more of the money into the classroom and less of the money into administration. So there's several things we could do. When we did the Conference of Alaskans, I suggested we set up an endowment to pay for education. And if we'd have done it when I suggested it, it would be working now.
Ms. Vasquez.
No, we're not getting the best bang for our money. It's a big item in our state budget. We need to look at savings, efficiencies, drill down, and see if truly we're getting what we're paying for. Our test scores show we're not getting the best results we need to get.
Okay, my question is now for Mr. Bell. Mr. Bell, I read your online voter pamphlet statement. I was quite surprised that there is no pamphlet at my house in paper, but that's the way it works these days. You were chair of Alaskans for Legislative Reform. What was that organization? Who sponsored it, and what were you trying to do? And what did you learn?
Well, actually, it was to get term limits for the state legislature and even our federal delegation. The first time we did it, we got that on the ballot three times, and it passed all three times. The first two times, the Supreme Court shot it down. And the third time, the legislature reversed it. But we think that most Alaskans would like to see term limits in the legislature, and I agree. We'd have a much better legislature. The states that have done it have seen a marked improvement in their legislative function once they had term limits.
Ms. Vasquez.
I support term limits. I think we have an entrenched elite class, both on the state level and national level. They've gotten too comfortable. They don't feel the pain of the people. And I think they get used to a lifestyle that may not be realistic. I think we all need to take our turns and serve as much as possible. It needs to be a citizen legislature, citizen Congress.
Let's go to Daisha Eaton.
This is for Ms. Vasquez. As we know, alcohol is linked to many social problems. Is the state doing an adequate job of regulating the alcohol industry in Alaska?
It's not a question of regulation at this point. It's a question of, for example, when I was a prosecutor, it was very frustrating. There were very little rehabilitation programs available. Liquor industry pays about $32 million in taxes. Unfortunately, that money is not put into rehabilitation programs, which I think is unconscionable. I mean, you cannot tell an alcoholic or someone that has a drug problem to wait 3 or 4 months. And unfortunately, it causes a lot of pain on a personal level, family level, and also society level. So, no, we're not doing enough.
Mr. Bell?
You know, we dealt with this issue when I was on the Assembly almost constantly, and it is a significant issue. There's been several programs, one from Sweden, where they take the chronic inebriate and put them in an apartment, but not with other inebriates, but with other, they're only the one apartment in the complex, and then they're not allowed to go drink with their buddies. They've had about a 1-to-5 success ratio with that, which is actually pretty good. I mean, it sounds terrible, but that's better than most programs. So I think there's programs like that that will work. I did a calculation when I was on the Assembly. We were spending $150,000 a year between the state, federal, and city governments per inebriate. And it seems like if you pooled that money, we could fix that problem.
Okay, I have some final questions here, and we'll start with Mr. Bell. You alluded earlier to the problems doctors have with paperwork. And this is known to many of us in the community as doctors turn into being accountants and businessmen after going to medical school. But with the system we have that involves the government, that involves many insurance companies, how are we going to reduce their paperwork?
You know, I think we can do that legislatively.
Okay, that'd be a better answer. Go ahead.
And so I think we should. And the other thing that we could do, one of the problems with the medical costs is the patient doesn't really have any skin in the game, and that's kind of a pun, but anyway, they don't care what it costs because the government's paying for it or the insurance is kept paying for it. So I think if we had some way to say, if you can get these things done less costly, you would benefit somehow from it. And I've got some ideas on that. We don't have time to cover them, but I think there's a way to work it legislatively to make it less
expensive. Ms. Vasquez.
I think that with so many government programs and insurance paying the bulk of patients' bills, sometimes patients don't realize that what they do leads to a lot of waste. You know, going into the doctor when they just have a cold and it's just a matter of getting rest and eating chicken soup. I mean, there are times when you need to go to the ER room, but do you really need to go if you have a cold, for example? And a lot of people are using the ER rooms and using other medical facilities when they really don't have to pay much for it, if anything. So we do have to provide incentives, and we need to look at that issue.
Okay, we have time for one more question, then we'll go to the closing statements. We'll start with Ms. Vasquez. We live in the two-party system, essentially, although there are other parties, but two major parties. You are both proud members of the Republican Party. I'm going to give you a fill-in-the-blank answer question. A Democrat is a person who?
Believes in bigger government, more spending, less accountability.
Mr. Bell.
Ditto.
All right. We got something you can agree on. That's nice. Let's go to our closing statements, and we're going to start with Mr. Bell. You have 1 minute, sir, or a little bit more.
Okay, thank you. Well, first of all, thanks for having us here. You know, when you look at a candidate for office, I think you should really look at their resume. I feel like a person should succeed in what they do and then run for office. Succeed in business, succeed in labor, teaching, whatever you do, and then bring that experience to the legislature. I've served 6 years on the assembly. I've run a business here in Anchorage for 38 years. I've been on the board of GAME, Alaskans for Legislative Reform, statewide campaigns. I've done all of those things, and on top of that, I've done business with the oil companies for 35 years. I've negotiated with them. So I can bring that to the legislature, that experience, and I think it will be helpful, because I think things have really got polarized in the legislature right now, and somebody needs to come in that's used to negotiating, knows what the impact of the various things on businesses, and bring some agreement to the process.
Liz Vasquez, 1 minute or so.
Sure. We've lived here almost 30 years in Anchorage, 15 of those years in West Anchorage. I am the best candidate to beat Hollis French in November. I have the passion, the energy, determination, and courage, and I have a more recent track record of getting things done. As chair, we trailblazed. We got the Susitna Dam project going. We got a conservation program going, partnering with Green Star, and we even looked at different ways of saving money for the community. I do believe in more accountability. I believe we really need to deal with some serious challenges we have, including putting more oil in the pipeline so we have a sustainable, prosperous economic future for the state and for future generations. I do have a special toolkit to deal with all of this. I have a legal degree. I have 2 masters of business administration. I have an extensive background with regard to statutes and regulatory matters. And thank you. I would appreciate your support. Check me out at www.lizvasquez.us. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks.
Thank you, Senate candidates. And we'll be right back with some Anchorage House candidates.
Hi, my name is Hollis French, and I'm a Democrat running for re-election to the State Senate, District J. I'm running because I believe that Alaska's best days are still ahead of us. We have vast natural resources and a state full of can-do people. Our resources, which were given to us at statehood, must be managed wisely for the next generation. I came to Alaska when I was 19 and found work on an oil rig in Cook Inlet. I worked 13 years in the industry, there in Cook Inlet and on the North Slope as well. I know firsthand how good and how valuable oil jobs and oil development are to the state. Now, we're in the middle of a tax debate, one that's been going on for several years. And during that time, we in the Senate have gathered evidence and data. And based on what we learned, we passed a bill this year that would have lowered oil taxes on new oil fields, fields that are going to be necessary to keep the pipeline running. If you send me back to Juneau, I will work as long as it takes to make sure that we have a healthy oil industry here in Alaska. What I won't support, though, is a bill that simply pushes billions of dollars to the oil industry with no strings attached. Oil tax breaks have to be tied to new oil development here. Now, there's more to this race than oil, of course. And one thing I've been focused on is improving our education system, and that's crucial because successful economies are built around an intelligent and trained workforce. Our schools are good, but we can do better. Our university, and I'm a UAA graduate, should be first rate. One idea that's close to my heart is establishing more access to preschool for our youngest students. Only about 15% of Alaskans go to preschool, and yet study after study shows the powerful and long-lasting effect of preschool. I think that voluntary preschool should be available to all who wants it. Again, my name is Hollis French. I'm running for re-election to the State Senate. I'd be honored to have your vote.
Hi, my name is Anand Dubé, and I'm running on the Republican ticket from West Anchorage, District 19. 15 years ago, I came to this great land to pursue education and stayed to enjoy the beauties of Alaska. And thanks to the blessings of Alaska and America, I've built a wonderful life with my wonderful wife, Shivani, and our beautiful daughter, Arna. Many of my political views are based on my early experiences growing up in India. I have deep appreciation for the opportunity, the freedom, and liberty that only exists in America. America truly is the beacon of light for the rest of the world. And I'm very proud to be a naturalized American citizen. I'm pro-family, pro-business, pro-liberty, and pro-individual responsibility. I'm a chemical engineer by profession. I have a master's in business as well. I know how to design complex systems, troubleshoot problems, and more importantly, I know how to measure effectiveness of programs and processes. Unfortunately, these are all skills that are sorely lacking in Juneau. Our state today is at an economic crossroads, and we must have the courage to take care of these challenges as quick as we can. We cannot afford to kick this can down the road. During this campaign, I've had the opportunity of chatting with a lot of wonderful people, and I would appreciate hearing directly from you. You can find me on Facebook, or you can find me on the web at anandubé.com or myalaska.me. That's myalaska.me. Thank you, and I would be honored to serve you as your representative in Juneau.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Holmes, and I'm running for re-election to the State House, representing West Anchorage, District 19. I know the new lines have people a little bit confused, so the new District 19 is made up of the areas of Turnagain, Lake Hood, Lake Spinard, Connors Lake, DeLong Lake, and Gladys Wood. It also encompasses all of the airport and all of Kincaid Park. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born and raised right here in West Anchorage. I love our community, and I'm running for re-election because I know that it takes hard work and dedication to make sure that Alaska continues to be a great place for all of us to live. It's been a tremendous privilege representing you the last few years in the legislature, and it's one that I don't take for granted. My goals for our state are pretty straightforward. I want our kids to enjoy the same wonderful opportunities that I had growing up in Alaska. I want to keep them safe. I want to give them an excellent education, and then I want them to have good jobs when they're done. To that end, I've advocated for putting more computers and more books into our local classrooms, for improving the pedestrian safety in our neighborhoods, for ensuring affordable energy in our communities, and for saving for our future. I've sponsored successful legislation that will protect Alaskan consumers and that will keep housing developments moving forward. I've worked to protect our seniors and to make sure that more doctors will see Medicare patients. And I have consistently fought to reduce levels of domestic violence and sexual assault. I've worked hard these past few years to represent you and to earn your support and to earn your trust in Juneau, and I hope I've succeeded. I would greatly appreciate your support on your vote on Election Day. Thank you very much.
Welcome back. Now let's meet the Republican House candidates in District 20. They are Mia Costello and Tamara Van Gemmingen. Ms. Costello, would you please start with a one-minute opening statement, please?
Thank you. First of all, I wanted to say thank you to the station for offering this opportunity for the candidates to reach out to you tonight. And I want to thank you for tuning in. I appreciate every opportunity to listen and to connect with voters. My name is Mia Costello. I was born and raised in Anchorage. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I'm a product of the Anchorage School District. I went to West High School and then on to Harvard University. I was the first generation of my family to attend college, and I returned to Alaska and began working in government. I also attended the University of Alaska Southeast and received a master's degree in teaching. I'm a pilot, a teacher, a mother, and a wife. My husband is a lifelong Alaskan also, and we both have two boys who are both in the school system. I was elected 2 years ago, and I am serving on the House Finance Committee. My website is votemia.com, and you can reach me at 227-5276. Thank you.
Tamara Van Gemmigan.
Good evening. I'm Tamara Van Gemmigan. I'm a third-generation Anchorageite, and all three generations have graduated from West Anchorage High School. I have a BBA in marketing from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, which has given me the opportunity to have a very successful career in outside sales for the past 14 years, right here in Alaska. I have a beautiful daughter, Ariana. She just started at Diamond High School yesterday. She's in the Japanese immersion program and just made the competitive cheer team. I believe in giving back to our community. I've been a member of the Change Point Church for the last 9 years, and as such, I've been able to volunteer with the Cold Weather Shelter, the Thanksgiving blessing, and the Christmas blessing. Right now we've got dilapidated roads, overcrowded schools, and high fuel costs are just some of the challenges facing District 20. I'm a definitely a problem solver, and I look forward to discussing my ideas with you this evening. Thank you.
Okay, now we'll turn to the journalist questions. I'll ask the first one. It's for Mia Costello. You believe in smaller government, you've said, in various forums and places. How are you going to achieve that?
Well, Mike, I think that when we look at government and what government is supposed to be paying for, we should turn to our Constitution. And I actually read it over again last night. When our framers of our Constitution set about writing it, they determined what essential services that government should be paying for, including transportation and education and you know, the basics of state government. I think that as we look at declining throughput in our oil pipeline, we have to look at reducing the cost of government.
Okay.
I too believe in a smaller government, but at the same time, I think that the cost for running each department has gotten way out of hand. And I think right now that we need to actually start looking at how we can consolidate some of our resources and start making sure that each department is actually using the same vendors from town to town. That would, by giving ourselves one large contract to cover all of those expenses, will help us to curb some of these outlandish expenses over the years.
Okay, let's go to Daisy Eaton for her with her question.
This is for Ms. Van Gemmigan. In your statement to the voters, you say you will meet the needs of locals, not special interests. Who are the special interests?
Different oil companies, mining companies, people who, you know, are paying the constituents, or I'm sorry, paying the legislators to actually be running. I mean, I don't have any special interests that are out there. You know, I've got my own individuals who are supporting me, and I appreciate that.
Ms. Costello, 30 seconds.
Could you please repeat the question?
In your statement, in her statement to the voters, she said she will meet the needs of locals, not special interests. And I'm just curious, you know, what she was getting at with special interests. Maybe you can expand upon the question of special interests.
Sure. Well, 81% of the contributions to my campaign has been individual Alaskans, and I'm really quite proud of that. I do think that the job of a legislator is to listen to the constituents and go around and hear what the issues are. Some of the issues in our district are the safety of the roads. Kincaid Park is a priority. We have issues with Sand Lake water level lowering and an invasive species in the lake too, which I was able to receive funding for in this last session. So I think that you learn the local issues by going door to door, and I certainly appreciate the time that people have spent with me, and I appreciate the support of those 81% of individual contributions.
Okay, thank you very much. My turn to ask a question. This is from Ms. Von Gemmingen. You say you're going to cut state spending. How are you going to do that? Be specific, or as specific as you can be, briefly.
Sure. As I mentioned, I feel as though we need to start consolidating different vendors, and I think that you take the University of Alaska, for instance. None of the same vendors are used between UAA, UAF, and UAS. It costs us a lot of money when it comes to everything from POs to storing things for the maintenance department. And I feel that we need to start looking at those and making it a large contract, because when you do that, people will bring down their rates and they will give us a better deal, which will curb our spending.
Ms. Costello.
Mike, the issue of the declining throughput in the pipeline is a very serious one that we face as Alaskans, and especially when we look at the majority of our budget is funded by the production of oil. The largest department that we fund is the Health and Social Services, which is $1.3 billion. Education matches that. While I appreciate some of the ideas in terms of consolidating, I think that we have to make some tough choices this session. I think that we're going to have to look at how we can be more efficient in government.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to Daisha Eaton.
And we've just been talking about filling the pipeline. You've made filling the pipeline a priority. How do you plan to do that?
Well, I appreciate the question. I do think it is a priority when we look at all of the local issues that people talk to me about at the door and the issues that we face as a state. Essentially, it's funded by the throughput in the pipeline. And I think that we need to make a decision in Alaska about what kind of a future we want. Do we want our roads paved? Do we want the troopers keeping us safe? Do we want our education options available to us that sometimes cost money? And I believe that reducing the progressivity would be a good start. I supported the governor's effort to do that. We don't have anything on the table right now. I think that we need to be competitive as a state and determine what our role is in the global market of oil and how we want to participate. And I think making our taxes more competitive would be a very good step.
Ms. Von Gemmingen.
I feel that, keeping the pipeline is full is important, but I don't believe that we should be giving away the farm. I believe that we need to start tying it to production, because as you can see, the oil companies are not hurting for money. They've got record profits. So I also see by going through the airport that their employees don't necessarily live here. You know, they're not spending their money in our state. They're not giving back to the community themselves. So, you know, I think it's a give and take, and I think we need to come to the table and make sure that it's the best for our future.
Now, I'll ask a couple of questions, and we'll start with you, Ms. Costello. And each of you will have 30 seconds to respond. Oil finances most of our budget, but it's a fluctuating commodity. Right now it's over $100. In the late 80s it was as low as $3 a barrel. How do we budget and plan financially with a fluctuating product like oil that can so wildly change in value?
Well, Mike, I think that we have to recognize that we will prosper as a state when we produce that oil. And certainly the high price of oil has masked the decline. Right now we know that we need $106 per barrel in order to balance the budget, and we have a decline in that throughput. And I think that as we look forward, that this issue is very significant. I think that production is more important. Right now we have a windfall profits tax based on the price of oil, and we need to incentivize that production.
Okay, and your response?
I think that we should start looking at diversifying our economy, our economics, because right now we do rely so heavily on the oil companies and making sure that oil goes through the pipeline. And with the decline in the price of it and the influx, it's very, very volatile. I mean, you never know what's going to be up or down. And I think we need to start looking at other resources, because we've got industries like mining that are only taxed at 3%. Why should the oil companies take the brunt of it when we've got large resources right in our backyard going out the door at only 3%?
We'll have a second question, 30 seconds each. Tamara Von Gemmingen, you'll go first. And the question is for both of you, what is government doing that it shouldn't be doing, either in policy or in spending, and be as specific as possible?
I think that we should, you know, right now I think we're spinning our wheels. We're really not doing much to get anything done. We're passing things that are more along the lines of feel-good things, like, you know, making a special month or honoring people, but nothing's really been accomplished in the past 2 years. And I think that we need to start moving forward and making a difference in the state, because otherwise we're not going to go anywhere.
Mia Costello, 30 seconds.
Thank you. I was really happy to introduce and have passed last session a bill that makes Alaska the most competitive state in the country for fast-growing businesses. And I think that when you ask what is government doing that it shouldn't be doing, we shouldn't be getting in the way of entrepreneurship and innovation, especially when we have graduates coming out of our university who need jobs and want to be creating those jobs. I think that streamlining regulation and making it as easy as possible to start a business in Alaska and thrive is something that I know that I've made a priority.
Okay, now we'll go to the section of the evening where the candidates can ask one another questions. We'll start with Mia Costello with her first question, and you will have Ms. Van Gemmingen 45 seconds to respond, and then you will have 30 seconds to comment on the response. So go ahead with your first question.
Thank you. Tamara, at a previous event, you had mentioned that you hadn't made up your mind on the coastal zone management proposition that'll be on the ballot, and I was hoping that by now you've made up your mind and you could share with us your views on that.
Absolutely. I actually was able to do some research on it, and at the time I wasn't really sure of the issue. I felt that right now a lot of the big companies, the oil companies, mining companies, are definitely the ones who are backing the no, and whenever that happens, I like to definitely look into it. And after doing so, I think that we definitely need a coastal management program back in place. We have the largest coastline, obviously, of the entire U.S. And but is this the right initiative? I think they've added a lot of things. I think it is a little bit too much, and it doesn't mimic the old management program that was in there. But I think that, so my answer would be no. I'm going to vote no on the proposition, but I think that we should address it, and it's important enough for the voters to be put in front of the voters that I think the legislature needs to take a better look at it.
Go ahead, Ms. Costello.
Thank you. Mike, I'll be voting no on the proposition. I do not feel that the way it is written, that it's open for progress in Alaska and back to our Constitution, which requires us to develop our resources for the benefit of Alaskans. I think that the coastal zone management proposition on the ballot is a hindrance to moving forward.
Okay, Tamara Van Gemmingen, your question for Mia Costello.
In the past 2 years, you've only sponsored 4 bills. Of the 4 bills, only one was passed into law, Sexual Assault Awareness Month for April 2011. It is all very well to make people aware of it, but what have you done to fund ways to prevent this terrible problem?
Thanks for the question, Tamara. As a member of the House Finance Committee, we did fund the governor's Choose Respect initiative, and we actually increased funding for women who are abused in rural communities that have no place to go so that they can be flown into Anchorage where they can receive care. I think for anyone who's a victim of sexual abuse or violence that it's a serious issue, and that the proclamation brings attention to it. I think that it is a serious problem we face in Alaska, and I was actually proud to bring that forward. I'm also very proud of the economic development bill, which makes Alaska the most competitive state in the country for small businesses to come and work here.
I would have probably have taken the $2 million that we had, that you had allocated to the UAA shootout, and taken $500,000, given it to UAA to do the marketing, but using the $1.5 million on our shelters, education to teach young people that the behavior is not acceptable. It's time to stop the silence on violence.
Okay, Mia Costello, your opportunity for a question.
Thank you. Tamara, do you favor the statewide initiative to raise property tax exemptions from $20,000 to $50,000?
I do. I think that it's, you know, for me, I live in the neighborhood. I give back to my community. I spend all of my money in the state of Alaska, with the exception of a few vacations here and there in the last few years. But I think that it gives people a little bit of a break, and when we're looking at such high fuel costs, I think any opportunity to give money back to the people to help spend it in the economy will help stir the economy more.
30 seconds.
I'll be voting no on Proposition 1. I think that as we look at our budget concerns and our throughput issues and the economy right now, that putting that on the ballot, it's the wrong time, and I think that eventually it would come back to the state. And as we are looking at funding those essential services, I think the state's going to have to tighten our belts, and I'll be voting no on Proposition 1.
Okay, now we'll go back to Tamara Von Gimmigan and her question for Mia Costello.
One of the bills you sponsored in this past session was a Stand Your Ground bill. Once the news broke of the Trayvon Martin shooting in Florida using this identical worded law, your sponsored bill was dropped. Now seeing the direct impact of such a bill on families and a community, would you still put this bill forward this year?
I would support a similar bill because I believe that, first of all, I want to say that for any parent who's lost a child in a violent way, I think that it's truly a tragedy, and my heart goes out to that family. I do believe that that laws can't be made for specific situations always, and I believe that if you are protecting your property and your family members and loved ones, that the duty to retreat should not be your first duty. I think that you should be able to protect your family in the best way that you can when they're being harmed or possibly harmed.
Why would you actually bring that bill forward? Because right now we have the most lenient gun law abilities to actually have guns, and anyone over the age of 21 can carry a concealed weapon. The difference is with your Stand Your Ground bill, people would be able to carry a gun anywhere they have a right to be.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up. I'm sorry to cut you off. Okay, we'll go back to Mia Costello.
Thank you. Tamara, with the decline in the throughput and the budget constraints that we're seeing, where do you see making $200 million in cuts in next year's budget?
I don't believe that we should be necessarily cutting anything. I mean, right now that the thing is that we feel that when you cut, people look at administration, and I think that's the wrong place to start looking. I think that we need to start looking, as I've mentioned, at different vendors going out and getting much more concise contracts to consolidate these things, and that will cut down on overhead costs and maintenance costs.
30 seconds.
I think that when you go to Juneau and you're looking through the budgets, I oversee the Department of Natural Resources and Commerce and Economic Development. It takes a lot of fine-tooth combing to find out where you can find efficiencies. I was proud to have voted and helped pass a bill that will look at performance-based budgeting for all of our state departments, and I think that that's something that the Alaskan public will benefit by as we look at where do we get the value for our dollar.
Okay. Tamara Von Gimmigan for Mia Costello. This is the final question.
In your June 5th, 2012 newsletter, you stated, "I work hard for my colleagues in the legislature to push forward the issues that matter most to our district and Alaska by voting to provide a quality education for our children." Why didn't you support raising the base student allocation as proposed in the legislative session?
I did not vote to increase the base student allocation, that's correct. The per student funding was something that did go up. We funded the transportation and energy costs that schools were facing. And I think that as we look forward in education, which is such a vital part of what we do in government, that we should make sure that we're getting results for the dollars that we spend.
Well, I have a friend here in Anchorage who has a master's degree in teaching and qualifies for low-income housing. We need to do much more for our own teachers.
Okay. Now we'll go to the journalist questions. And Tamara Von Gimmigan, this is for you. The first question is, can the state do anything reasonably about the high cost of gasoline at the pump that many Alaskans have been very unhappy about?
Absolutely. I think that right now we need to start looking at possibly why are we being charged by the gas companies as if we've shipped it from the lower 48? I know we did some research a few years ago, but the fact of the matter is it never got changed. Nothing ever happened with it. And the gas prices out in the bush communities are through the roof. I mean, it's $6 a gallon of fuel in Angoon alone. I mean, that's outrageous. And I think that we need to start looking at, you know, why are they doing this, and go back to the purpose of why the gas prices are so high.
Mia Costello.
Thank you. I support Governor Parnell's proposal to sell our royalty oil at a cheaper price to the refineries to help reduce this burden on the families. And I know that every time I go to fill up, it's a shock. And across Alaska, we are definitely feeling the pain. And I think that the royalty oil reduction is a good first step.
Okay. Now we'll turn to Daisha Eaton.
This is a question for Ms. Costello. We have some of the most expensive health care in the country. Some people tell me it's cheaper to fly to Seattle or somewhere else to have certain procedures done. What can we do to bring back, or what can you do down in Juneau to bring down the cost of health care for Alaskans here?
And certainly health care costs are on the rise, and it's one of the major areas that we spend in state government, and it's certainly a concern. As a member of House Finance, I know that we hear from all the departments, and the department has said that we can expect these costs to rise. I think that some of the things that we can do is focus on prevention, getting people in to see their health care providers before problems arise. I think that one of the bills that we passed last session will help, which will help bring underrepresented professions in the medical profession here to Alaska. And I also think that the medical profession should be more transparent with the cost of the care. I know that oftentimes when my family goes to the doctor, we are horrified at how much we have to spend when it's all said and done.
I think we should start with the children and teaching them how to eat better, as well as, you know, encouraging parents and families to get out and exercise more. I mean, again, it starts at the home, and if you start eating better and taking care of yourself better, you're not going to have the health problems like childhood obesity, which in later in life is causing diabetes, high blood pressure, and sending those health care up through the roof. And I think that also, you know, by doing that, you know, we're just going to start driving down the costs.
Okay, now it's my turn to ask a question for Mia Costello. And the question is, are the benefits state employees receive just about right, too high, or too low, the benefit package?
Now, as I sit in the House Finance Committee budget subcommittees, we do hear from the departments about the need for the employees that work for the state, and we hear both sides that we need to offer more, and then in other cases I think we're spending too much. So I believe that my overall answer is it's just right. I do not believe that we're in a position right now to be raising salaries for the employees, but I do think that it's a conversation that we need to have with all of the departments.
I think right now it's just right as well. You know, we've got so much in costs, and if we start tinkering with it at this point, we're probably going to run into raising the cost of it, and I don't think that that's in the best interest of the state.
Okay, let's go to Daisha Eaton, please.
This is for Ms. Von Gemmigan, and federal dollars are running out, and the legislature has a big task on its hands in trying to respond to reduced federal spending in Alaska. How can they do that?
Again, I think we should start looking at other resources. I mean, it was inevitable that the federal spending would, you know, come down. I mean, it was so plethora for so long, you know, with the war going on, we really benefited from it, and we're grateful to that. But at this point, I think we need to curb it and start looking at other areas to make up that dollar. And again, I think that we need to start looking at other resources that are already in our state to make up that shortfall.
Thank you. We did see that we can expect a 15% decline in federal funds to the state of Alaska every year going forward. This is an alarming statistic, and I think that diversifying our economy, looking at bringing in new business, is definitely a priority of mine. And I think that one of the things that we funded this last session was immunization. And so we will see that the federal government will be asking the state of Alaska to carry the burden of some of the funding that we've seen in the past and we've come to expect.
Okay, we have final questions from the host, and then we'll go to the closing statements. If you've been following the news, we'll start with Mia Costello. You know there's been a great controversy in Missouri over a U.S. Senate candidate's remarks on the subject of abortion. This got national attention. There are many members of Congress, including this particular member, who would like to make not only abortion illegal, but abortion illegal in the case of rape and incest. It should abortion be illegal in the cases of rape and incest? 30 seconds.
you know, my mother gave me up for adoption at birth, and it would be like saying to her that if she hadn't chose to give me up for adoption and have me raised by another family, that she would then go to prison for choosing another option. And I just simply can't support that, so I would not support that.
I'm pro-choice, and I don't believe that we should be telling anybody, a woman, what to do with her own body. I think it's her choice, and so that's how I stand.
Thank you. Now we'll start with you this time. Okay. And our prisons are overcrowded in Alaska, so much so that we've been sending many prisoners to other states, and it's a very expensive procedure. Is there anything we can do to reduce the prison population and perhaps divert people on another path?
Absolutely. The Goose Creek Correctional Center is an amazing facility. I've had an opportunity to actually walk the entire length of it from the inside before it opened. I had an intricate part of the building of it, and it's a state-of-the-art facility. It's just sitting there, and I think now that we've started to it takes a year to be able to set that up. They have to run through all of their drills and make sure everything is working properly. And now that it is, and they've actually started opening the doors to about 200 of the prisoners, I think that is going to be able to reduce that and bring them home.
Thank you. Mia Costello.
Mike, I think there's two ways that we can address this issue. One is that when we pass legislation in Juneau that creates new crimes, for example, for some of the new drugs that we're seeing on the street, I think we have to look carefully at what the sentencing structure will be. And secondly, we've heard from educators, and we also hear from the corrections industry, that they can actually predict whether or not a person is likely to find themselves in prison by whether or not they're reading in third grade. I would like to aggressively promote reading by in grade level by third grade, and I think that this would be a positive thing for the state of Alaska.
Okay, now let's go to our closing statements. I have 1 minute, and first, Mia Costello.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much for your time tonight. My name is Mia Costello, and you can reach me at my website, votemia.com, or via cell phone, 227-5276. I was elected 2 years ago, and I've been serving in the House of Representatives, and it certainly is an honor to be representing you in Juneau. I feel quite strongly that it's my job to listen to your concerns and make myself accessible to you. I've worked very diligently on the issues for our district. I've been a leader in making Alaska a better place for getting your permits through. I've had people tell me that they've spent years waiting. And I would appreciate your vote on August 28th, and thank you very much.
Okay, Tamara von Gemmingen, 1 minute, please.
I've been called a moderate Republican, a liberal, a Democrat, and an independent. If being a pragmatist, creative, tolerant of different views, and a problem solver is what they mean, then bring on the labels. I don't get hung up on labels. I've been a registered Republican since the age of 18. I grew up with a Republican household with Republican views. The fact of the matter is, I'm an old school Republican. That isn't part of a radical right-wing group. The truth is, I'm an Abraham Lincoln Republican. I care about the people, and I'm able to look at both sides and make a decision that's best for the people in my area and the state. I would appreciate your vote on August 28th, and if you please get out and vote. If you don't vote, you can't complain.
Thank you both, and we'll be right back with more House candidates.
Hi there, my name is Michelle Scannell, and I'm the Democratic candidate running for House District 20, the Jewel Lake, Sand Lake, Campbell Lake area of Anchorage. And I'm running because we need a state rep in Juneau who won't be MIA on the issues that directly affect us. The roads in our district are a mess, and our children are attending schools that are dramatically overcrowded, like Kincaid and Sand Lake. And if the person representing us isn't taking care of the local problems, then how do we know that they are going to stand up and face all the important issues that are happening to us statewide? We Alaskans must seize this moment, our time to control our Alaska future. This is our time to manage our own coastal zones, our bays, our inlets, and our own mudflats. I believe in protecting the permanent fund and our PFDs, and making sure we're paid a fair price for our oil. I'm not willing to trade the never-ending wealth of Bristol Bay for a pocket full of copper. I'm nobody's puppet, and the only special interest I serve is you. To ask for someone's help is a humbling thing, but I need your help. I come before you to ask for your support and your vote this primary election as well as the general election. Vote for me, and I will always have your back. Together, we can win. Thank you.